Setlist, the music business podcast from CMU. This week, songwriters fear 35% royalty drop in 2020. Welcome to Setlist, the music business podcast from CMU. I'm Andy Malt, and with me is Chris Cook. Hello, Chris.
Hello there.
As ever, we are going to be taking a look back at some of the biggest and most interesting music industry news stories of the last week. A week when Spotify boss Daniel Ek said that the streaming service is planning on raising its prices.
Yeah, get those prices up, I say.
Through the roof.
£47 per stream. That's what they should be charging for privilege.
Well, if that campaign that was launched last week is going to be successful, then I think that possibly does need to be the price.
You're talking about that new campaign led by a collective of musicians in the US. Although, to be fair, they were asking for a cent per stream.
Okay, £45 per stream, maybe not.
Did I say
£45 a month, maybe.
Did I say 47? Did I say 45? Can anyone remember what I said? Anyway,
I don't think... Disappoint, yeah, 47. I don't think that's actually going to be the price, so it probably doesn't matter.
It probably doesn't matter what I just said. So yes, this was the latest quarterly investor report from Spotify. Number of subscribers up. Yay! Advertising sales are improving again after a bit of a COVID wobble. Yay! Billion euros plus being handed over to rights holders every quarter, says Spotify boss Daniel Ek in this investor report. So there's some top-level stats brags that were coming from Spotify in the last week. But yes, Daniel Ek did actually talk in his letter to investors about possibly increasing the price of Spotify in the year ahead. And he was talking about how with so many great podcasts, including some quite controversial ones at the moment, and all that great music that's coming up, that the, what was the term he used? Value per hour.
Yeah.
Listener value per hour. I mean, that's a kind of a made up term, isn't it? But he was kind of providing the rationale as to why it might be time to put up some of the Spotify prices. And the reason why that is interesting is in the ongoing debate in the music community about the streaming music business model, including this campaign that's kicked off in the US recently, but also here in the UK where we've had the Broken Record campaign and the Fixed Streaming campaign, not to mention the years of digital dollar debates that we've been involved in with the Music Managers Forum. The idea that it's time to put the base level Spotify price from £10, €10, $10 a month up has become an increasingly big part of that conversation in the last year or so. Because remember, streaming is ultimately a revenue share business. So we can say, oh, Spotify should be paying a cent per stream royalty. But that's not how it works. It's about, well, how much revenue is there on the table each month? How many streams were there each month? But one way to get the approximate average per stream rate up is to increase the price that subscribers are paying. And at the end of the day, the base level Spotify price, that £10, €10, $10, I mean, that's been the same since Spotify launched more than 10 years ago. And so there's been inflation since then. I mean, I think £10 in 2008, 2009 is like worth £13 today. So actually, Spotify has been getting cheaper every year by not keeping up with inflation before you take into account things like the discounting and the family plans and stuff like that. So I think everybody agrees the price has to go up. Even Spotify agree. We know for certain Spotify agrees on that point now. But I mean, even when Spotify was kind of resisting talk of increasing prices a few years ago, they knew eventually the price was going to have to go up. There are challenges with putting the prices up, challenges which Spotify has, which say a Netflix doesn't, because of course Netflix have put their prices up. So there are some challenges, but it was interesting in this latest investor report. A, Spotify confirmed, in addition to the price rises we knew had been underway for a couple of years now in a couple of Scandinavian markets, that they have added, I think, a dollar a month to the family plan in a bunch of markets. And as I say, Daniel Ek has invented this notion of the listener value per hour. And the listener value per hour on Spotify today is so good that maybe that's justification to put the prices up, which will ultimately mean there's more revenue for everybody to share in. So that was interesting, but not interesting enough for us to talk about it on this week's set list.
No, because later on we are going to be discussing Harry Styles' investment in a new arena in Manchester. But first, let's talk about some stats that came out of the Global Collecting Society Group, CISAC, last week, which it had some positive figures in it. 8.4% growth in music revenues collected by its members in 2019, with total income reaching nearly 9 billion euros. But there was also some gloom, and considerably larger gloom than those positive figures for 2019, because the report also said that once the figures for 2020 come out, it's expecting to see a fall in collections of between 20 and 35%, which could equate to a drop of 3.5 billion euros.
Yes, so interesting stats last week from this organisation called SISAC. So I suppose, although we've almost certainly done this before on Setlist, presumably 12 months ago, the last time we looked at their stats. But let's quickly explain what SISAC is. As you say, it's a global group of collecting societies. So what SISAC does is it brings together all the collecting societies around the world that represent songwriters and composers and the publishers that they work with. That's not a completely correct statement, because actually some of the collecting societies that are just representing mechanical rights on behalf of publishers in Anglo-American markets, so societies like MCPS here in the UK, technically aren't part of SISAC, whereas PRS would be. Also, actually, there are some collecting societies in SISAC's membership which aren't music at all. They collect monies for other creative disciplines. So my initial statement's not completely correct, but it does bring together the vast majority of the collecting societies around the world that represent songwriters and composers and publishers and the song copyright. And even those mechanical right organisations, which are not technically part of SISAC, generally they do put their figures in to this report that we get once a year. So what this report does is it basically takes all of the stats, the figures, the revenues, the growth, the trends from every songwriting collecting society around the world, and it puts them all into one place. And it tells us how the songs side of the music rights industry, so not recordings, not the record industry, but how the songs side of the business is doing. There is another footnote that we always add at this point every single year when we talk about these figures, which is these stats are the money that flows through the collective licensing system on the songs side of the music industry, which is actually most of the money, because the collective licensing system, the collecting society, organisations like PRS are used a lot more when it comes to song rights than they are to recording rights. So it is a significant portion of the money being generated by songs for publishers and songwriters are in these stats, but not all, because some revenues don't go through the collective licensing system. So sync deals with movies and games and advertising agencies, most of that money doesn't go through the collective licensing system, so it wouldn't be in these figures. When it comes to streaming, Anglo-American repertoire is increasingly subject to direct deals, which confusingly means some of the money is in these stats, but some of it isn't. So we've got some sync money missing, we've got some streaming money missing, but despite all of that, it is as good as we get in terms of getting to grips with trends and developments in the songs business, the music publishing business. And I guess before we get into the doom and gloom, because it was quite an interesting report, wasn't it? Because in theory, it was about 2019, which was a good year for the songs business. But quite a lot of the report was actually about predictions about 2020 and the impact that COVID is going to have on this side of the business. But before we get into the doom and gloom and the COVID stuff, I mean, maybe we should go through some of the part that you gave us the top level positive stats, but some of the other areas of growth that we did see in 2019 when it comes to songwriters.
Well, yeah, especially as those positive stats give you an indication of where money is being lost now. So some key areas where revenues were up was where money is collected from broadcasters and the live sector and businesses that play recorded music in public, like shops and cafes. So TV and radio income was up 4.5% to 3.3 billion euros, and royalties paid by live and public performance were up 5.6% to 2.6 billion euros. Obviously, that makes up a large chunk of the 9 billion euros that came in last year. And like I said, all of those are things that have been hit in recent times, particularly the live sector, obviously. And also cafes and bars and shops have not been operating at 100% capacity and obviously have spent time closed. So those are going to be where we start to see significant hits on the revenues collected this year.
Yeah, and actually, one of the charts in this CISAC report that is important here is the chart that breaks down what percentage of overall monies come from each of those different revenue streams. And the reason why that's important is because you might think, well, hang on a second, we're talking here about copyright. We're talking about monies coming in for music copyright, and we're talking about a pretty significant hit in 2020 as a result of the COVID shutdown. We're going to see billions of euros down in terms of total collections around the world. But you might be saying, if you're a regular listener to Setlist, and if you've been paying attention in recent months, we've previously said that the copyright side of the industry is more immune to COVID. So whereas the live industry, obviously, it has been catastrophic for the live business, because since March, a huge number of venues and promoters and festivals have basically been closed with zero income. So for the live industry, we know this. COVID has been catastrophic and continues to be as the pandemic extends and the restrictions on live performance extend. But on the right side, we know that when it comes to the record industry, recorded music, okay, not every recorded music revenue stream has been completely immune. So initially when the high street closed, physical sales, certainly in some countries, took a bit of a hit. Record companies also earn when music gets played on TV and radio. They also earn when music gets played in public spaces. The money you earn from broadcast is often a share of ad revenue with commercial broadcasters, and the advertising industry took a hit when COVID first struck. And as you've already said, if it's pubs, clubs, bars, cafes, well, if they're not open, then they're probably not paying money in for music being played. So, you know, the record industry is not entirely immune, but in 2019, 56% of recorded music revenues came from streaming services. And streaming services have continued to grow throughout COVID. I mean, we referenced those top-level Spotify stats right at the start of the podcast, didn't we? Streaming is doing well. It is continuing to grow. The money is still coming in. And because for the record industry, streaming is the majority of the business. Okay, 56% in 2019. We're not talking 90% of the business, but nevertheless, it's a significant portion of the business. It is continuing to grow. So the record industry, to an extent, has been immune. Because yes, we're taking a bit of hit on physical, on broadcast, on public performance, but streaming continues to grow. And so that's kind of compensating for the wobbles that we're seeing over here. But that's the record industry. What we're talking about today is the publishing business, it's the songs business. And I suppose the songs business kind of sits in the middle. It's certainly not as catastrophically hit as the live sector, but it is not as immune as the record industry, because, as you've already alluded to, for the song side of the business, streaming is still important. And indeed, you know, digital income that CISAC was reporting last year was up 27.2%. And remember, not all streaming income is even in those stats. So digital is important on the song side of the business. But in terms of the overall pie, it's a smaller slice. Whereas live, public performance, broadcast, really significant on the song side of the business. And those are the revenue streams that have taken the biggest hit because of COVID.
Yeah, and the reason that despite that growth, that digital isn't such a big deal on the publishing side as it is on the recording side, is because of something we've discussed before on Setlist, that the split of money that comes from streaming services is far more weighted in favour of the record labels. The songwriters and publishers get a smaller cut of that, whereas with broadcast and the money coming in from shops, it's split more like 50-50 or close to that. And then in the case of live, recorded music isn't being used at all, so it is only the publishers who benefit from that.
Yeah, and that's a key reason why, if you look at IFPI, so that's Record Industry Stats for 2019, I said, you know, streaming is 56.1%, but if we throw downloads, because there are still some downloads in there, if we throw downloads in too, digital accounted for 63.3% of recorded music revenues in 2019, whereas of the CISAC money, 22.8% is digital. Now, let's remind ourselves of that footnote. Not all the digital income is being reported by CISAC, but nevertheless, the basic trend is sound, which is that although it's a growth revenue stream, it's becoming a bigger part of the publishing business, not the same dramatic levels as on the record industry side. And of course, you know, in the 2000s, when recorded music revenues were in decline because CD sales were slumping and downloads, although growing, were not compensating for that slump, the fact that the publishers have this other revenue stream, which is their cut of ticket money, the money they get from the live industry, meant that in the 2000s, when the record industry was having a bad time, the publishers were also suffering because CD sales were slumping, but not to the same extent, because they had the buffer that they had their cut of the live income, and live income was growing in the 2000s. The live industry was booming. So back in the 2000s, the publishers were buffered from the drama and trauma facing the record industry because they had these other revenue streams like live. Fast forward to 2020, streaming's booming, that's brilliant, but it's more brilliant for the record industry. Meanwhile, that all-important live revenue stream on the song side pretty much disappeared overnight. Hence why, as we've said several times, this year's CISAC report wasn't really looking at the good news of 2019 at all. It was going to its members, to all the collecting societies around the world, and saying, how big a hit are you expecting for 2020? And I mean, another thing which CISAC sort of alluded to in its report is money can take quite a long time to come through the collective licensing system, particularly once you get on a global basis. And in a weird sort of way, in the short term, that's been a good thing, because it means that those songwriters who are also performers and who suddenly lost their live income in March have still been getting some money through the collective licensing system that was collected in 2019, or maybe even 2018, and is slowly working its way through the system. But we will therefore have a long-term impact, that for a lot of songwriters, they're going to really feel the hit in the checks that are coming up from PRS, and then throughout 2021. Even if the live industry returns to normal at some point in 2021, the songwriters and the publishers are going to continue to feel that hit right till the end of 2021 because of how long it can take the money to flow through the system.
Yeah, so to delve into the predictions for this year's income, the societies that were surveyed by CISAC for this report say that they expect live income to slump between 60 and 80% in 2020, with total revenues, as I've said, down 20 to 35%. That and other affected revenues will likely take the total collections for 2020 down to the levels of 2015. So not just slipping back a year, slipping back 5 years.
Of course, the hope is that once the COVID shutdown is finally over, whenever that is, that things will quickly return to normal. And these revenue streams that have taken a big hit in 2020, live, broadcast, public performance, will quite quickly get back to 2019 levels, and then we'll see further growth. But that doesn't alter the fact that you're still going to have a 12-month, maybe even an 18-month period where those revenues are significantly down. So for individual publishers and songwriters and composers, particularly those operating, you know, at a much smaller level, you're still going to have to deal with the fact that you have that 12, 18-month period where you're making significantly less. And the fact that things are going to go back to normal in a few years' time and continue to grow, well, that doesn't help in short term in terms of cash flow.
Yeah, so in putting out the report, CISAC used the figures it collected and the predictions for the future as a justification for calling for governments to provide more support, not just in their emergency COVID-19 funds, but also in tackling the copyright issues that organisations like CISAC have been talking about for a long time. So in his introduction to the report, CISAC's president and ABBA member Bjorn Ulvaeus said, "We were the first industry to be impacted and we will be the last to return to health. Creators are innovative, entrepreneurial and resilient, but to build a long path out of this crisis, we have to turn to governments. This is not just for emergency funds, however welcome those have been. Policymakers also need to tackle the problems in front of them, the deep flaws that have skewed the playing field for creators for many years. COVID-19 did not create this skewed level playing field, but it has sure aggravated and exacerbated it. This is the time for governments to show they take creative industries seriously. It is time for policymakers to wake up and act." Meanwhile, CISAC Director General Gadi Oren wrote in his foreword to the report, "Looking ahead, this report reflects extraordinary resilience across our sector, but not yet recovery. Things will get worse for creators before they get better, with loss of collections in 2020 translating into reduced distributions in 2021. In this crisis, CISAC's member societies have acted to defend their creators with all means available. While the current crisis is exposing the deep fragility of the collective management system, it is at the same time showing the vital importance of its work for creators."
So an interesting edition of CISAC's annual report, which you can download free from their website. As we say, actually some very positive figures in there relating to 2019, but very much the stance of the report is huge challenges this year and next year, and what can the industry, the societies and government be doing to try and mitigate all of those challenges for songwriters in the year ahead.
And finally, last week news emerged that Harry Styles is now a live industry investor and consultant. So, I mean, why not? I think Harry Styles can do what he wants. I mean, he certainly seems to be. This investment will be in not the Manchester Arena that exists, but a new arena in Manchester that is going to be built called Co-op Live. That's being built by the US venue company Oak View Group, who got planning permission to build this massive new venue in Manchester last month, although they announced it earlier in the year that they were planning to. It's going to be sponsored by the Co-op, known for their supermarkets and funeral business. So the venue is going to be called Co-op Live. There are various links that were listed in the press release as to why Harry Styles might want to invest in an arena in Manchester. There was the fact that he grew up sort of near Manchester in a way, and also he apparently used to work at a Co-op supermarket, so obviously he would want to use some of the money he earned there to invest in a venue in Manchester. It makes perfect sense.
Yeah, of course, Harry Styles grew up in Cheshire, which is to the south of Manchester. So not technically Manchester, but Manchester is kind of the nearest city. As somebody who also grew up in that part of the world, it is true.
Well, you grew up, you're his neighbour, aren't you?
When people say, where are you from? You do say, near Manchester. Because nobody's heard of Holmes Chapel. And you could say Crewe, but for most people, that's just a station where they had to wait 48 minutes for a late-running train. So you tend to say, and particularly for international people, you tend to say, oh, I'm from near Manchester. And I think it is true. You say that so often that then in your head, you come from Manchester.
And then you start investing in venues. How many venues have you invested in?
None yet, but who knows? Maybe next year. I am a bit confused by this. It was kind of weird in the press release, wasn't it? I mean, let's also point out, this company, Oak View, co-founded by the US music industry veteran, artist manager, former Live Nation exec, Irving Azoff. So he is the co-founder of this company, Oak View. Irving Azoff has a management company. His son is part of that management company. And one of his son's management clients is Harry Styles. So there is also a corporate link going on here, in addition to Harry being a local lad and a Co-op fan. But I thought the line in the official announcement trying to link Harry Styles not only to Manchester and the northwest of England, but specifically to the Co-op, who are the sponsors of this new venue, because apparently, well, the press release said that when he was a teenager, he did a paper round for the local Co-op. But assuming that is in the town of Holmes Chapel, where he grew up, and, you know, 20 years earlier, I grew up, I'm pretty sure the Co-op there doesn't do newspaper deliveries. I mean, I wasn't living there when he would have been of the age to be doing a paper round. Maybe I'm wrong. I didn't go and do any detective work on this. But I'm pretty sure it's the Martin McColl little supermarket around the corner that does newspaper deliveries. So I don't quite know what's going on there. But I mean, I'm not going as bold as to say that this is an outright lie on the part of Harry Styles, Oak View and the Co-op Live venue. Maybe he did. Who knows? But yeah, interesting, isn't it, that he is investing? And it was one of those press releases which we're usually a little bit cynical about. Were we cynical about this one? It was one of those press releases where it's like, I'm not just an investor. I'm not just putting some money. This is not just about me making lots of cash down the line once this venue is a success. I'm going to be involved in the development of this venue and help this venue be everything that Manchester needs. That was also part of the press release. We usually assume that's nonsense. Are we assuming that's nonsense in this case?
Well, of course. I mean, Oak View has put out a lot of statements about their plans for this venue in the months running up to it getting planning permission, and it seems to have a quite clear plan about what it wants to do already. So I don't know why they suddenly need Harry Styles to help out. And presumably, I mean, I suppose he's not touring at the moment, so he's got some time on his hands.
But one would hope that by the time this venue's built, because it's not been built yet, so by the time it's built, he will be touring again.
Yes. Well, maybe, I mean, but there's time to make plans for, I mean, maybe he could say, oh, don't make that corner so sharp, or paint the door green. And I don't know, I'm not a venue consultant. What do venue consultants do?
I suppose because the co-op is quite unusual, isn't it, that as a business, it's owned by its customers, so it doesn't have shareholders, so it's seen as being a slightly more sort of community-driven sort of business, and Oakview have been piggybacking on that and saying, oh, we're going to be very much about community outreach. They've also been bigging up the environmental credentials of this venue, so maybe he could get involved in the community outreach and all of that. Maybe he could, I don't know, deliver some newspapers to the local houses around the venue.
Well, there was that story last week, wasn't there, that his car broke down outside a fan's house, but the fan wasn't there. But I think one of the parents recognised him and invited him in, and he fed their fish and left a note for the fan. So I mean, maybe he's going to do that sort of thing. Just go house to house saying, would you like to see some live music? I don't know. Like I say, I'm not a live music industry consultant, so I don't know exactly what to do. But I assume that's the kind of thing you do. Just go house to house and mention the venue.
And maybe distribute some co-op groceries.
Yeah.
And discounts for future funerals.
Yes, I think that was the joke I made in the original story, wasn't it? That by calling it Co-op Live, it distinguishes it from the funeral business.
That being Co-op Dead is your point. You're suggesting they should rebrand.
That's what they should call that. They should rebrand the funeral, because it's Co-op Funeral Care, isn't it? And that's a bit too wordy. Too many syllables in that. Co-op Dead, just get straight to the point.
I do hope that all of these different co-op businesses are still all part of the group. The co-op businesses are quite complicated because there's lots of different cooperatives, so it might turn out that all these things you're saying are a nonsense. Didn't do any detective work on that either, but I'm sure you're right. So, we had the customary quotes from Harry and from Oakview about this partnership.
Yeah, Harry Styles said, I am incredibly proud and excited to be partnering with OVG on their plans for Co-op Live. Manchester is an incredible city filled with incredible people, and I couldn't be happier being involved in this project.
Very good Harry Styles impression there.
So that's what he sounds like.
He also auditioned for X Factor in Manchester, didn't he? There you go. There was another Manchester connection. It's not
was
just...
Was that at Manchester Arena?
Probably, yes. I don't know. Meanwhile, from OVG, which is short for Oakview Group, Francesca Bodie from there said, at OVG... our vision is driven by a unique view that puts fans and artists first in every decision we make. I mean, clearly that's nonsense, but that's what you said. There's no artist in the world who, I mean, you put making a profit first, don't you? I mean, they're a business at the end of the day. They're not stupid. There's no artist in the world right now, apparently, better placed than Harry to advise us on delivering a first-class experience for visitors and artists at Co-op Live. We're focused on building one of the world's best arenas in Manchester, and Harry's advice... Sorry. And Harry's advice and consultation is going to be invaluable as we work to deliver that.
So. Is he the best placed artist? Surely there must be artists with more experience in venues and in the live business than Harry Styles. He's only worked at the Co-op.
That's not true. He worked at Mandeville's Bakery, also in Holmes Chapel.
And the local knowledge. This is good stuff. The listeners are getting here. You don't get this on other music industry podcasts.
No. Nope.
The bakery news.
Nobody has the same insightful knowledge about the town where Harry Styles grew up. He's done some acting. He's done lots of stuff.
Yeah, but not acting in major live music venues.
No. But despite your cynicism, I'm genuinely excited about what's going to happen at this venue now that not only do they have the co-op above the door, but they have Harry Styles involved. I had an idea once that I was going to email Harry Styles. Not that I have his email address, but I don't know. harry@styles.com. I'm a big Cheshire Cheese fan, and I think it's about time that Cheshire Cheese had a revival and kicked cheddar out of the supermarkets. And I was thinking of suggesting that Harry Styles, having grown up in Cheshire, should invest in this Cheshire Cheese business. It could be a co-op Cheshire Cheese business. This could all... It could end up being that this partnership's all about cheese. I need to get that email written this weekend.
Well, we've already learned from my impression of him just now that he's very good at delivering quotes. And actually, he said more about this project. So we could see if he mentioned cheese.
Yeah, does he mention cheese in the second half of his quote?
I mean, I don't want to give any spoilers, but don't get too excited. He continues, I was drawn to this project on every level, from the opportunities it brings to the contribution it will make to the city, and most importantly, that it will allow even more live music to thrive in Manchester. It's just another sign that this amazing city continues to grow.
Just as soon as tier 3 restrictions are out of the way. But they've still got to build this place, so one would hope, as we've said before, that by the time this thing is bloody well built, that live music will very much be part of Manchester life again.
And Manchester will be growing.
Do you think it will open with a Harry Styles residency? Do you think that's part of the plan?
I mean, if he doesn't play the first show there, that would be odd, wouldn't it? I mean, that's the deal, isn't it? That must be the deal. They've just signed him on to do the first show, and then they're trying to make that a bigger deal than it is.
I think they should have Zayn opening. I think that would be good.
Yeah. Or a reunited One Direction, but without Harry.
Yes. With Zayn and without Harry. That would be interesting, wouldn't it?
Would it?
No. Anyway, the news is there's a new venue being built in Manchester. Harry Styles has put some money in, and they've given him a made-up consultancy role as part of that deal.
They didn't say how much money he'd put in. I mean, maybe it really was his paper round money. We just don't know. But anyway, I'm sure it'll all come to light in the future. He'll probably announce it on stage when he's playing that first show at the venue. Who knows? We haven't got time to wait around now because it's going to take a while to build it, like you said. And that is all we've got time on this edition of Setlist. Do remember to do all the stuff that you do with podcasts, particularly sharing it with your friends. Why not tell someone how much you enjoyed hearing Harry Styles talk a load of old nonsense about stuff? And also that songwriters are going to be destitute next year. Those seem like nice things to tell people about at the moment. So go and do that right now, or at least after I've finished doing these credits, because you should stick around and listen to the credits. People don't do that enough, I think. So Setlist is the music business podcast from CMU. It's presented by Andy Morton, Chris Cook. And for more on CMU, go to completemusicupdate.com.